In the remaining two lectures, I want to talk about the points modulo p on the Shamor variety. So the idea is we started off with the Shamor variety. Let's put a k in here, over the complex numbers. And we saw that it actually has a model over some number field. And if we choose a prime ideal, and the ring of integers here, then we can reduce this modulo of the prime ideal, and we get a variety over the residue field. And we would like to know what the, so this is the points of this and this field is a finite set, and we would like some description of the points over the finite field. So why do we want this? Well, in all the applications to the Langmuir program, one needs this because, for example, if you want to know what the zeta function of this is, then it's defined in terms of the zeta functions of the reduction. So, and they're defined in terms of the number of points in finite fields. So, and also you need this in, if you're trying to construct Galois representations and things. So this is rather crucial. So the first idea is that the whole theme of this has been that in, at least in many cases, you can describe the points up here, and in fact also over the reflex field, in terms of abelian varieties plus additional data, or more generally abelian motives and plus additional data. So the first idea would be that we can describe the points down here in terms of abelian varieties plus additional data, or abelian motives plus additional data. Well, you can do that, but even if you do that in a nice way, then it's not going to be very helpful to the representation people. For example, as far as I know, there's no place in the trace formula to plug in abelian motives. So what I'm going to do in this lecture is construct. So this lecture, I'm going to construct a category, construct another category. And then fairly elementary way that looks just like the category of abelian varieties. The category that's rated. So I put the zero in. So I mean tensor with Q. So I'm going to construct in an elementary way, at least in particular, not mentioning abelian varieties, a category that looks just like the category, this category here. And then the idea is that we'll just try and describe the points of the Shamor variety over the residue field, over the finite field, in terms of this other category, this category of fake abelian varieties, if you like. And since it has an elementary construction, then you can get combinatorial data out of it, and then you can apply the whole machinery to it. Yeah? Yeah. Well, I'll discuss that tomorrow, but in fact there is a way of, it's unique. And in the good case, in the case of good reduction, in the good case, that I'm gonna, the only case I'm going to discuss, there actually is a unique model of the ring of energies, and you can characterize it nicely. But today I'm just going to construct a category, that's sort of a fake category of a abelian varieties of a finite field. So the first thing I'll do is I'll define what looks just like means. So, huh? pseudo abelian model, whatever. Call it what you like. So. So as I say, I'm first going to define this. So suppose, so first I want to make some categorical statements. So if we have a category which is an abelian category, and more than that, I want that the homes of objects, finite dimensional vector spaces, Q vector space. Well, it doesn't matter Q, but Q would can substitute anything in there. And I also want it to be semi-simple. In fact, Ray proved that this category here is like that. It's an abelian category, Holmes of finite dimensional Q vector space. Semi-simple means, well, in an abelian category, if you have an object, to be simple means it just has no, it means what you expect. It has no sub-object other than zero on the whole thing. And now if you have a simple object, if you look at what are the endomorphisms of E, so we have E, well, I suppose we have two simple objects, and have a map from one to the other, then what can the image be? Well, the image will be a sub, the way in a abelian category is just like modules, so everything works the same way. So we have a homomorphism from one to the other, the image will be a sub-object, so it's either zero or the whole thing. So either the map is zero or it maps onto, and if it's not zero, then the kernel must be trivial. So if I have a map between two simple objects, well, if I have two simple objects, either they're isomorphic or there's no only the zero map between them. So semi-simple means that every object is a direct sum of simple objects. So if I want to describe this category, then what I need to know is the set of isomorphism classes of simple objects. And for each, if I take an E sigma, a simple object, then I should know the isomorphism class. Every object is a direct sum of simple objects. Well, it's the same. Finite sum, yeah. Well, I'm assuming that the Holmes are finite dimensional Q vector spaces, so that forces it to be a finite sum. Yeah, so obviously these categories are somewhat simple. So I claim that you can really describe them up to equivalence just by writing down the set of isomorphism classes of simple objects. And then for each isomorphism class, we have an endomorphism. Well, I should have mentioned back up here, if E simple implies that ND is a division algebra. Because, again, if you have a map from E to itself, either it's zero or it's an isomorphism. So if I have an E sigma, for each isomorphism class, I get a division algebra, which is well defined up to isomorphism. So for each, say, sigma belong to each isomorphism class, I need a division algebra. And it's only defined up to isomorphism. Now, I claim that if you know this and you know this, then in some somewhat weak sense, you know the category. The point is that given a set like this, I can construct a category. I can just take one object, E sigma, for each. I can make a category. For each sigma belonging to sigma m, I'm making a new category. I take one object here, and I take other objects. So all objects are just finite sums, sigma ri, ei, where this is a positive integer. And by RIEI, I just mean the direct sum of RI copies of VI. So object is something like that. And then, well, the endomorphisms of sigma RI, well, the endomorphisms, if I have a simple object, then the endomorphisms of the direct sum of RI copies of this is just the matrix algebra of EI over the endomorphism algebra of EI. And then if the EIs are a distinct non-isomorphic, then the endomorphism algebra of this will just be a product of matrix algebras. So if I start off with a category like this, if I write down a set of isomorphism classes, and then for each one I write down the division algebra, I can more or less reconstruct the category. Or at least I can reconstruct the category up to an equivalence of categories. Then I can just write down a category with 1 e sigma for each isomorphism class, and I just choose the division algebra. So I simply choose n d sigma. So I've got the simple objects. I have one simple object of each isomorphism type. I know this. There are no maps between different e sigmas, and then if any other object will just be a finite sum of copies of the E's, and then you can write down the endomorphism algebra, such a thing. So you can, given this, you can get this, and given this, you can construct a category, and there's actually an equivalent of categories from this to this. You just send each object, each simple object, to the isomorphism class corresponding to it, et cetera, et cetera. So I'll call these the numerical data of the category. So what I want to do is I want to construct in an elementary way a category with the same numerical, but not quite so stupid way as this, but some category which has the same, at least the same numerical character, same numerical invariance as this category here. Before I do that, I need to discuss a little bit about the classification of division algebras over fields. So perhaps, well, probably many of you know this, but I should review it anyway. So given a field F, we're interested in the central simple algebras over it. So always that means that F is in the center of the in the algebra, but central means it actually is the center of the algebra. Simple means it has no two-sided ideals. And Wedderburn's theorem says they all look like this, where this is a central division algebra. Central means, so if I have F contained in A, central means it's actually equal to the center. Okay. Huh? A, in order for A to be a central simple algebra of F, F has to be actually equal to the center of A, and it has to be simple. Okay. So Wedderburn's theorem says that that the central simple algebras over F are precisely the matrix algebras over central division algebras over F. Okay. So I want to describe all these things, which amounts to describing all the division algebras. Now, in the case of the real numbers, there's actually two. There's the matrix algebra and there's the quaternions, which it's convenient to write in this fashion. So where I have to describe the modification. So JG, J inverse Z is equal to Z bar, and J squared is equal to minus 1. So those are the, well, this is the only division algebra over R, so there, and this is other central simple algebra. So the other, they're all just matrix algebras over R over this one. Now if I take F to be a local field, then the description is somewhat the same, except you have to, here you have to replace 2 by N. So if I take, so this is a finite extension of QP. Then, so I choose an unramified extension of degree N. Essentially, there's only one. So this is a finite extension of QP. Essentially, there's only one unramified extension of a given degree of each given degree of F. And then I'll write down a bunch of algebras that look more or less like that. So that's right, call it B. So B is looks like this, except as I said, they replaced 2 by N. So it's L plus L E plus and to describe the modification, if I take a Z in here, then E Z E inverse is, you get the Frobenius, there's a canonical generator for the Galois group here called the Frobenius. And when I, L is not contained in the center of B. B, the center of B is supposed to be F. L is not contained in the center. So, but when I conjugate this particular element here with Z, then I get the Frobenius applied to Z. And then I have to say what E to the N is. E to the N is equal to, so let's call a pi a prime element here. All right, E to the N is pi to the I, well, times 1. That defines a central simple algebra over a local field F. Well, no, I is E to the N. Yeah. So if I have elements in there, what do I have to tell you in order to be able to multiply two elements in this direct sum? I have to tell you how you move E past elements in L. Well, I've told you that. And then if you multiply E's, I have to tell you what happens when you get past E to the N minus 1. And I've told you that. Pi to the I times 1. Well, I is fixed. So for I is fixed depending upon which, if you, for each I get a different algebra. Okay, so, and then the invariant is I over N regarded as an element of Q mod Z. For each I in this range, I get a central simple algebra, and it's a division algebra if I and N are relatively prime. Otherwise, it's not. And every division algebra is isomorphic to one of these. Okay. So now it's convenient to classify these things rather than writing down bunches of things. It's convenient to introduce the Brough group. So the Brough group really only interested in division algebras, but you forced them to introducing the Brough group anyway. I tried thinking about not introducing the Brough group. But. So the idea is here that if A and B are central simple algebras, central simple algebras over a field over F, then you can tensor them, implies that the tensor product is also a central simple algebra over F. And if you tensor A with the opposite, so the opposite algebra is just the algebra you get by, it's the same as a set, but you reverse the order of multiplication. And then this is canonically isomorphic to the endomorphism algebra. So F linear endomorphisms of A. And the this is sort of almost obvious because you let A act on itself by left multiplication and on the right by this one by right multiplication. So you suddenly get an action of this on this by F linear, and you count dimensions and they're the same. So the Brough group, so you define, you say that A and B, if you have two central simple algebras, you define two of them to be similar. So this is similar. If some matrix algebra over one is isomorphic to some matrix algebra over the other. So the idea is in going to the Brough group, we're going to consider similarity classes, so we're going to essentially put matrix algebras equal to one. So now the Brough group of F is just equal to the set of similarity classes. With similarity classes of central simple algebras. And the multiplication is AB is equal to A tensor B. Now, this is a wonderful group. And then the key point is that the Wedderburn theorem tells us that each class and the Brough group is represented by a division algebra. Algebra which is actually unique up to isomorphism. So the Brough group is a, so if you're trying to classify things, we're trying to classify division algebras, it's nice to make them into a group, and this is a convenient way of making them into a group. So you sort of embed them in a set of all central simple algebras, and then there's a similarity classes of central simple algebras that are represented by division algebras, but then there's this nice group structure. Now the so let me quote, so the Brough group of the real numbers is just isomorphic to the group of order 2, which we write in this fashion. And we call the isomorphism the invariant, okay? If you have a finite extension of QP, then the Brough group, so it's the two elements I wrote up over there, the Brough group of F is isomorphic to Q mod Z. So the visible group. And the isomorphism is the invariant. And the invariant. I've written down a complete set of every division algebra is isomorphic to one of these things. This is division algebra if I and n are relatively prime, and every division algebra is isomorphic to one of these things. And this algebra has this invariant over here. And now the Borel group so if f is a number field, then this is a wonderful exact sequence. So this is the direct sum of the completions of F. And this is the map that sends the class of a division algebra or something, or a central simple algebra to the sum of the invariants of this is the sum of the invariant map. So this map here, of course, takes an algebra and just tensors it with FV. This is the exact sequence. So this classifies central simple algebras up to similarity over a number field. To give a central simple algebra over a number field, you just have to give one central simple algebra over each of its completions. And for almost all V, they have to be trivial. It goes into the direct sum, not into the product here. And if you give some central simple algebras over the local fields, then when do they come from here? Well, you just take the sum of the invariants. If the invariants sum to zero, then they come from something here. This is a wonderful theorem, and you prove it in the course of proving class field theory. It's no easy to prove this. Well, in the cohomological approach to class field theory, one proves the main theorem of class field theory in this exact sequence more or less simultaneously. Okay. So we're interested in this many in division algebra, so I claim that every class in here is represented by a division algebra. So this says that to give a division algebra over a number field, you just have to give, so this is, there's a map from here to Q mod Z, which is an isomorphism, except what's an isomorphism when V is non-Archimedean. Otherwise, it's certainly not an isomorphism. It's, you get this, and the Borel group of the complex numbers is, or any algebraically closed field, is zero, which is rather easy to see. So if I wanted to describe a division algebra over a number field, all I have to do is give a bunch of numbers in Q mod Z adding up to zero, finite number of numbers here adding up to zero in here. I thought maybe people would know this, but it's certainly a wonderful result. Now, suppose we go and look at a category. Now, according to V, this is a category, well, whatever the field is, it's a category of the same type I have up there. It's semi, the Abelian category is semi-simple, and the Holms are finite dimensional Q vector spaces. In this case, so you might ask, maybe not too optimistically, what are the numerical invariants of this category? Well, amazingly, we know the numerical invariants of this category. It's the theorem of Honda and Tate. So a set of some isomorphism classes of simple objects are classified by the, so it's the V, you take the V Q integers, I don't remember what they are. They're sitting inside Q bar, sitting inside the complex number. So the VQ integer, remember, is just an algebraic integer such that no matter how you embed, it's sealed into the complex numbers, it has absolute value Q to the 1/2. And it's not this, it's this modulo the action of gamma. So it's conjugacy classes where gamma is the Galois group of Q bar over Q. The first thing. So how do you go this way? Well, we discussed this a little before. So given, yeah, in fact, I mean, the map from here to here was already given by André Weil. I mean, given a pi, this, you get a pi A, which is, so if you're given a simple Abelian variety over FQ, it's Frobenius, it has a Frobenius element, which generates a commutative subfield of the endomorphism algebra here. And so this is just an abstract field, and this is a VQ integer, but it's in an abstract field. And over here, we're looking at the VQ integers inside Q bar. So to go from here to there, you have to map this into Q bar, but of course, there's no preferred way of sending pi A to an element of Q bar. So instead of getting an element of Q bar, you get a conjugacy class orbit under the action of the Galois group. So certainly from V, we get a map from the simple objects here to here, and then Tate proved that you get actually, well, Tate proved that they're characterized, that this is injective, and Honda proved it's surjective. And Tate also proved that if A pi is a simple Abelian variety, simple Abelian variety corresponding to an orbit, gamma pi, then the endomorphism algebra, so first of all, the center of the endomorphism algebra, so this is a division algebra over it's a division algebra, but its center need not be Q. It's center of N0 A pi is equal to Q pi. Well, literally, let's just say it this way. And then we have to, so in order to say which division algebra, so this is the center, in order to say which division algebra we have to give its invariance. And the invariance of N0 A pi, so one invariant for each prime of this field here. So it's 1/2 if V is real, which it hardly ever is. And the interesting ones, so let's put 0 if V does not divide, does not lie over P. So Q is some power of P to the V. And we saw that before. And so the interesting part is to say what it is at P, and it's odd V pi over odd VQ times the degree of the local extension. It should look somewhat familiar. That's a wonderful theorem. So we know the numerical invariance of what I call the numerical invariance of this category. So what I want to do is I want to construct in an elementary fashion a category that, at least with the same numerical invariance as this. Let me just say a word. The only thing that Tate didn't prove was the surjectivity, that everything on the right came from every orbit of fake Q integers arose from an abelian variety. That was proved by Honda. But you can probably almost guess how he would prove it. You see, when we're discussing abelian varieties of CM type, we had a way of starting off with an E and a C, a CM field and a CM type on it. Then we constructed the abelian variety over the complex numbers, and that was defined over some number field. Then we reduced that, and we actually had a formula. That was the Shimura-Taniyama formula. We actually had a formula for the vague Q integer that turned up from this in terms of phi. So the proof of the Honda part of this is almost an exercise now, because you just have to show that as you let E and phi runs through all CM fields and all CM types, then you get all possible vague Q integers, in other words, all possible sets of numbers in here. Okay. So now I want to construct the elementary categories of this that are somehow nicer than just writing something, writing down the skeleton of the thing. So one way to start off is, if we suppose we take a torus, and so let's take a torus over Q. And if T is split, well, then I can look at all the representations of T on finite dimensional Q vector spaces. In the first case, if T is split, there's no problem. You have the character group. So given a torus, I guess everybody knows about character groups. But also, if you have a torus over Q, you get a character group. By that, I mean Hom of Q bar of T into Zm. So this is a free Z module. So given a torus over Q, you get this free Z module, but you also get more, because if you start off over Q, you get an action of the Galois group on this thing here. And well, we get another equivalence of categories, Torre over Q, the category of Torre over Q equivalent to the category of free Z modules of finite rank together with an action of gamma. Anyway, so if T is split, then the T split means that T is just isomorphic to Gm to the R, Gm to the D over Q. Then the representations are just like being over the algebraic closure. They're just classified by the characters. So every representation is a direct sum over some characters. And this would be the subspace on which T acts through the character chi. So, and then, so the simple objects are just the V chi, and the endomorphisms of V chi, that's just equal to Q. So this is not really a terribly interesting category. So in this case, sigma representation, for the split torus, sigma representations of T is just the character group itself. The simple representations, this is a semi-simple, this is a category of that type up there, and the simple representations are just one-dimensional representations given by the characters, and the endomorphism algebra of H1 is just Q, so it's really boring. Representations. representations of T on finite dimensional Q vector spaces. Q, right? Oh, yeah, you're right. If I take this one to be the one-dimensional one. Yeah, this one's not, well, let's call it Q chi. This is just Q with chi, with T acting through chi. Okay, that's better, yeah. So now, yeah, so what I mean is the simple ones, of course, are the one-dimensional ones with chi acting. And the endomorphism of that is just Q. So in other words, the isomorphism class is a simple object to just classify that they're exactly the given by the characters. Well, suppose we take T arbitrary. Suppose I take a simple representation. So this is a finite dimensional Q vector space with an action of T. Then if I go up to Q bar, this will decompose into a direct sum of V chi's. Now if I assume that this is a simple representation, then I claim that the chi's that actually occur actually form an orbit under the action of the Galois group. So I claim this implies that the chi's that occur form an orbit under action of gamma. Well, if they didn't form, I form one orbit. Well, if they form more than one orbit, then you could decompose this into two bits according to the orbits, and you would see rather easily that each bit is actually defined over Q, so this would decompose. Now, it's rather easy to prove to work out, so if you consider that, it's rather easy to work out the numerical invariance of this category. Huh? Yeah, this one is defined over Q. So you take a simple representation defined over Q, then the characters turn up at it as one orbit under the action of the Galois group on the characters up there. So the simple characters are, in fact, classified exactly by the orbits. So, we look at the category of representations of T on finite dimensional Q vector spaces, and the simple representations are in one-one correspondence with up to isomorphism with the orbits acting on here. This is starting to look slightly more promising because over here we've been invited to classify by orbits under gamma, and here they represent simple representations that classify by some orbits at least. But in this case, if you work out what the, so if I take a simple object, so the proof of this is easy, but I don't have time to give it. So simple. So suppose you have a simple object which corresponds to an orbit, say gamma chi. Then what's the endomorphism algebra? Well, you work it out, and so this is gamma. So this is gamma modulo some open normal subgroup. So this is isomorphic, where n is the stabilizer of chi, of course. I'm not saying anything. It's not completely obvious. So, and then so if this, let's call the simple object V chi. Then the only endomorphism algebra you compute rather easily is just, let's call it, it's Q bar fixed under the subfield of Q bar fixed under the, so you take the subgroup fixing this and the corresponding field of endomorphism here. What's the question? Okay, no question. I should call this something by running out of, what should I call it, Q chi? So Q chi is the field, fixed field of a subgroup of gamma fixing chi. Is there some problem? I don't think. Huh? I mean, I have gamma acting.
Why n is over?
Oh, I see, yeah. It's not normal, yeah. I see what you like. Yeah, yeah. I said normal, I was stupid. I see, yeah. It's just some subgroup, open subgroup of finite index, yeah. Certainly not necessarily normal.
H,
well, it's the same. H is a subgroup of gamma fixing chi, but I don't write N for it because it's not necessarily normal. Okay. Let me point out that if we let PQ chi be the torus such that with, which is just Q chi regarded as a torus itself, then there's a natural map from T to T Q chi. And the point is that I claim that the set of characters of this torus is just, this is just HOM, it's just Z. It's a free Z module generated by the map from Q chi into Q bar. And what are the maps from Q chi into Q bar? Well, they're just this, exactly this. So it's Z to the, it's a free abelian group generated by gamma mod H. And there's a map from here to X star T. Namely, just given by this. So sigma goes to sigma of chi. So we get a map. So we get a map from the co-characters here to the co-characters there, which corresponds to a map here. So now we're making little progress, but we still don't have any division algebras coming up. So now we want to see how to get division algebras. So gamma is always the Galois group of Q bar over Q. So what we do is we look at an extension. So again, T is a torus over Q, but we look at an extension like this. It's an exact sequence. And there's some condition on this exact sequence. If I choose an S sigma map, so this is just, at the moment, this is just a set of points of T over Q bar. If I choose an S sigma, lifting sigma, then I hope probably everyone's seen this, that we get an action of gamma on this by conjugation. So we get a map, and the point is we need some condition on that. So that shouldn't just be some random map of this abstract group. It should be algebraic in some sense. So we get a map. I'm just saying we're considering an extension like this. Extension of this group by this group, but it's not just going to be an extension of abstract groups. I'm going to put some condition, and the condition is that when we get out of this, we get an action of this on this, and there's some, that should somehow respect the fact that this is the points of the torus. So it should be some regularity condition again. So conjugating by, so add S sigma is a map from TQ bar, conjugating by S sigma is a map from here to here. Let's call this A sigma. Then what we want is not quite that this is a regular map. What we want is a sort of a sigma regular map. What I mean by that is that if I take a f, a regular function, on t over q bar, then a sigma should be regular also. But the map from f to f followed by a sigma should be sigma linear. So if this was a regular map, it would give me a map of Q bar algebras. I'm not asking that it give a map of Q bar algebras. I'm just getting asking it to give a sigma linear map of Q bar algebras. Okay. So I'm going to consider extensions like this, satisfying this condition here. So this is an extension of abstract groups, but it's not quite just an extension of abstract groups. There's this regularity condition about how this acts on here. So I'm considering objects like this as some sort of generalization of Toure over Q. And the simplest example would be to take the semi-direct product, for example, of this with this. There is an action of this on this because T actually comes from Q. But okay, so now I want to define another extension, looks more or less similar, but suppose V is a vector space over Q bar. And I don't know what to call this. Well, I just called it EV. So I start with a vector space over Q bar, and I'm going to define an extension like that. So if I have a sigma here, I'll tell you what pi inverse of sigma is. But the fiber over each point is, and then I'll tell you how to multiply things. So this is the set of maps. So it's com from sigma v to v. So sigma v is v tensor over q bar, sigma into q bar. So it's really v, but with a different action of q bar. This is q bar linear. So we have, so I've told you what this is a set. And if I take sigma to be equal to 1, this is just in the morphism, so that should be isomorphism. Isomorphism from here to here. If I take sigma equal to 1, I do get exactly this set here. Now, if I have a map, so I have to tell you how to compose things. So I've told you what this is as a set. So if I have I have to tell you how to compose these. Well, if I have two things like that, I can apply sigma to this, and I get sigma tau v going to sigma v and a sigma. So I take a sigma tau to be the composite, a sigma times to be the composite. So this is equal to sigma a tau. It came out right this time. Good. A sigma times a tau. If I have two things in two different fibers, this is how I multiply them. Okay. So I get an extension like this. And so if I take an object like this, then I want to tell you what the representations of an object like this. Representations of an object like this are a commutative diagram like this. So if we take an E, then if I take an extension like this, by representation of an extension like this, I mean homomorphisms like a commutative diagram like this, where this is the extension defined by a vector space over Q bar. So I get so given this, I get a new category, and that's you can prove it's an abelian category, and it's et cetera, like that one up there. So it gives me a new way of constructing abelian semi-simple categories. No. So this one should be a regular, should be a regular map from TQ bar to this. But the V is really over Q bar. It's not a, this is EV, this is just a set. This is a set I defined over here. It's not the endomorphisms of V's. This is E is just the union of all these things. Okay. So suppose I take the representations of an E that I get in this fashion, then it turns out they're classified. So you can think of as a representation of E as being a representation of this that's somehow extended. If up here, if I took the semi-direct product, you could show that the representations of E would just be the same as the representations of T over Q. The sort of representations over Q bar and then a descent datum down to Q. But if we take this to be non-split extension, then we get something much more interesting. It turns out the simple representations are still the same as if you just took T over Q. So, well, I mean, not the same. I mean, they're classified by the same set. So, what are the numerical invariants of the representations of E? Well, you get the same set for the set of isomorphism classes of simple objects, but now the endomorphism algebra of the simple objects so are more interesting. So if I take B chi to be the simple object corresponding to an orbit gamma chi, then if you look at end B chi, this is a division algebra. And its center now is just the what we had before. I think I was writing it Q chi, which is Q bar upper H. But now it's a division algebra, and the now I have to introduce cohomology class. So I forgot to say that. The Bra group of a field is canonically isomorphic to the Skelwa cohomology group. Now, if we have a representation, then we get a map from as I discussed, well, we do get a map from T to T chi. Now, this has a cohomology class as well. So from here, we get a cohomology. So this gives us a cohomology class in H1, H2, gamma, TQ bar. Then you choose the S sigmas, and then S sigma tau. This cohomology class here measures the failure of if I choose sections, it measures the failure of it to be. If I choose these things, then I got it down correctly. So if I for each sigma I choose an S sigma, then this formula defines me a two cocycle with values in here. So I get a cohomology class in here out of this extension. And I also get a map from here to here. So I get a map from here to H2, Q with values in T. That's TQ chi. And then there's a lemma called Shapiro's lemma in Galois cohomology that tells us that this is just the same as H2 Q chi. GM, and this is the Bra group of Q chi. So this is a wonderful way of constructing given something like this as representation. Its category of representations is a category like that, and we can work out its invariants. Now, let me just say what the, after this preamble, let me just say what the result is, that you can write down an extension like this, except the only difference is that this is, this rather than being a torus, it's a pro-torus. But then the representations in a natural way will contain a subcategory with the, these invariants here. It will be a bigger category, but it won't, but it will contain a subcategory with which has these invariants. And now the full category, so the subcategory, the things, the weight representations of weight one, you can think of as fake abelian varieties over FQ, and the other ones you can think of as fake abelian motives over FQ. Well, we can work out, the point is that we start off with a cohomology class in here. And because if we get a representation, we do get a map from here to here. But Q chi is the center of the, in the morphism algebra here. And now there's a lemma that tells us that this is this, and then this is this. So this is what determines the division algebra. So this thing here is a division algebra with this center, and its cohomology class is this one here. Yeah.